It would be a chill start. Well, I know we spent the last 5 minutes talking about my deceased grandmother-in-law's favorite recipes for frozen salad. And I feel like that would be a cool energy to start besties with for now. Just talking about some recipes.
Cool.
Right now, here's a recipes. Next week, I'll be talking about chest bars.
Ooh, that's fun. But we do need one for this week.
Okay, so I've got a breakfast recipe, and I can confirm this is actually...
Now, would this be a recipe? This would be a recipe.
This would be a recipe.
Oh my God, now this segment is good and real. Hit me with your recipe.
Okay. So first you take the eggs. Every breakfast starts with eggs, as we all know. Uh-huh. And then you add, not with the eggs, but on the side, a little bit of apple cider in a glass. And then you add an apple cider donut alongside the apple cider. I call it apple egg.
Listen, Russ, I love the recipe for apple egg.
Thank you.
I think it's a lot of fun. But it does sound like three different already made foods that don't really interact with each other, as is normally the case in a recipe. Yeah. So is that what sets a recipe apart? Is that it's food that already exists that you eat at the same time?
Yeah, you just mix. I mean, you mix flour and water and stuff to make cake. So, like, how is this any different?
Mixing egg, donut, and apple cider, but in your mouth, not in a pot.
And my stomach.
In your
as
mouth
well.
And tummy. Right. Yeah, that's awesome, dude.
It's so much easier.
It doesn't sound like a recipe, though, or a recipe. It just sounds like you rustled something up.
Yeah, that's good, too. Maybe that's all it is.
Yeah.
Listen, Russ is leading us all into a new era of food. End of sentence. And I think if you're not ready to take that ride, you can get left behind with the rest of the people out there eating ceviche or whatever, and not egg, apple. Or sorry, was it apple egg? Sorry,
yeah,
I apologize.
It's not about like cosmopolitan meals. It's more rustic.
Oh man,
come
you're
on!
You're just full of them today, Chris. I've come missed you,
on.
Man.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just here talking.
Yeah, that's all any of us are ever doing.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best games of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy. I do know the best games of the week.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I'm sticking with the plural here. I know many good games this week.
Ooh, wow.
My name is Russ Freshy, and I know the best games of the week.
I'm a sleeping baby over there in wrestling.
Sleeping baby.
It sounds like. Well, welcome to the Vesties, where we profile the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. It is a video game club, my friend, just by listening, you are a member. We got a doubleheader for you this week. Games are, as we tend to announce in the show, when you least expect it, back. Games are back, everybody.
Yeah.
And these particular entries today, they have come a long way since Pac-Man. They are, I would say, wholly unrelated to Pac-Man in any
Wait, no. One of them has Pac-Man in it.
Well, shit, you're right. Actually, one of them has Pac-Man in it, so there's that on my face. We're going to be talking about Inscription and Guardians of the Galaxy. Guardians of the Galaxy, we'll say, for the second segment. So glad to see Telltale back.
No
in the mix.
Kidding, dog.
But first up, we're going to be talking about Inscription. Chris Plant, what's Inscription?
Inscription starts out as a spoopy card deck-based game, but it's not. You can correct me if I'm wrong here. I would say not as much a card game as it is like a tabletop D&D style game with cards with a meta game layered on top where you're straight up trying to escape the room.
It's one of the wildest games I've played this year. We're going to be talking a lot more about it right after this quick break. I will say, just as a table setter, Inscription is my current, maybe unseated, but I don't know about it, is my favorite game of 2021.
Wow.
Yes, I absolutely adore Inscription, and I am simultaneously desperate to talk about every facet of Inscription and also not wanting to spoil Inscription because, like, unlike a lot of these deck-based card battling games, it can absolutely be spoiled for you in a lot of unpleasant ways. So I want to try to keep it relatively vague.
Especially because I have a caveman brain and I haven't gotten past what is apparently the first act of Inscription, despite the fact that I do enjoy the game quite a bit.
Yeah, I think we'll stick to the first hour or so and not get into any of the biggie stuff. But Justin, we had a lot of people saying that you needed to play this game. Do you think that is because it is a mix of card games, which you are obsessed with, Sleep No More, Mask, Meta Theater, which you're obsessed with, and escape rooms?
It's everything I love in one game. It seems like absolutely engineered. And without spoiling anything, I think I said this in the last week episode, Russ is like, Justin, this is your game. Like, it's got all these elements you love. The only thing it's missing is FMV. And then later I was like, Russ, buddy, this hits all the notes for me. It is that rare game that it trusts you to meet it halfway, but makes itself like pleasant and engaging and like really brings you in from the very first beat. It looks like nothing else. It's like dark and scary in a way that like works, like in a way that you're playing a card game against someone you can barely see and he's constantly hidden in shadow.
It kind of looks like a PS1 game is what the like aesthetic reminds me of, like a PS1 horror game.
I love this aesthetic. They're trying to do like, it's like a retro, you know, it kind of reminds me of, it doesn't look anything like this, but conceptually like Obra Dinn,
yeah.
Where it's like
sure.
Classic elements that are being engineered and retooled in like a very modern seeming way. But like the guy that you're playing against who's hidden in shadow is putting on different masks to play different roles.
He's a real thing.
Yeah, he's a real fun character.
Is he more of a Joker or a Riddler?
He's more a Joker and a Toker and a Midnight Smoker, I would say, this guy, who I know his name, but I don't want to spoil his name.
It's Todd. Y'all, it's Todd.
It's Todd. This game, what works about this game that you guys can talk about without getting into the stuff that is sort of...
Yeah, I think for me, you know, I really liked Hearthstone when it came out and I got into it. And then I fell off when it just became like too much. There was too much to keep track of and classes and all sorts of stuff like that.
That was by Expansion Pack 2, probably, for Hearthstone. It's when it jumped the shark.
Yeah, and I think for this, obviously, it's a totally different experience insofar as this is not designed as like a living game that's going to survive forever. But it does do something that I always really liked about Hearthstone, which is introducing narrative into the card game mechanics when they would do those like single player expansions and kind of throw you for a loop with these like crazy rules in the middle of, you know, while you were playing, you'd be following like a certain set of rules and then the your enemy, the host in this case, would be like, but what if I did this and like totally changed the game entirely? And that, I feel like I'm like fighting against the tide a little bit. And makes me feel like really super invested in the events that are going on in the game. They also like some of your cards talk to you, which is very funny and cool.
Yeah.
And there's like characterizations in the cards themselves.
Yeah. My bummer with like most card games is I don't like reading rules. I don't mind rules in video games. I like Spelunky, but I don't like having to like read rules over and over and every new card. I just find it very exhausting. This game, and I know that puts me in the minority. Don't worry, I know. This game is so good about how it fits its rules into its story. So you mentioned the cards talking to you. It's menacing. They're like truly terrified of whatever place they are in. And they either are explaining it as a way to counter this ghoulish fellow that you're playing against, or he is outright saying the rules, but it comes across as menacing because, like you said, he just keeps changing them. So while it's giving me the same thing a lot of card games have given me in the past, I don't know, maybe it's like a spoonful of sugar sort of thing, but it goes down much easier.
It is also smart in the way that, so the sort of core mechanic for the section that we're discussing is one of sacrifice. So you play an animal The sort of base unit is a squirrel that doesn't attack or defend. It doesn't attack. It's just sort of like there to be sacrificed. And you can use your turn to draw a squirrel and play the squirrel, and then it's out there on the board. And then when you get an animal or creature that does do damage, you sacrifice the squirrel to play that card. And each card has a different sacrifice cost. It's the same way you would tap mana in like a Magic game. But what I like about Inscription and where it starts to feel really chunky is like a lot of card games like this have these loops where you build up what I would say is like a really solid deck, and it works synergistically and it feels like kind of very strong and undefeatable. Mm-hmm. And in a way that you can slowly sort of build your deck, and then you can slowly sort of lay out your strategy and it's consistent, whatever. Inscription, because you are constantly sacrificing to play your next card, it feels very much like swinging from vine to vine. Like, I really hope this next thing works because I don't, like, I'm going to have to kill the thing that is working pretty good for me to play the next card. It doesn't feel like good and powerful. It feels like scary. Yeah. Each time you play, because it could fall apart really, really quickly.
And that's on it. My only qualms with the game is related to how that works, because I have had runs that I have had like incredible success with. You can, at the end of each of your runs, you get to make something called a death card. And with that, you pull the stats from different cards in your hand, right? Like the cost comes from one card. If you're lucky, you can get a zero cost card. And then you can get like the health and damage numbers of a different card. And then you can get the sigil, which is like the, modifier. Think like in Hearthstone, you have the taunting one. Mm-hmm. And I forget all the different sort of things, but there's a ton of them in this game. And it creates like a unique card. I had one run where I had like this beastly deck with this god card in it that was just like able to, you know, if I get it in the first draw, I can defeat the opponent in a single round. I was crushing it. And then literally one bad turn on a boss fight and I was dead the next round.
Okay, but this is the secret genius thing about it. Those death cards are actually how you are, like, how this is a roguelite and how you are advancing. Because those death cards, a lot of games like this will give you, like, some sort of currency that you'll use to upgrade, or you'll unlock new cards that will get added to your deck because you've gotten to a certain level. The death cards are reseeded,
yeah,
between matches. So the more you play, the more death cards you will encounter, and these cards are very powerful. So you play it enough times, eventually you're running into two or three of these powerful cards that you can build a deck around. So that is the way that you're like sort of advancing as you play. It's not just starting you from scratch.
On that front, Juice, I had a quick question. As someone who's played probably more than anyone else here, as you
I finished it, to be clear.
And you finished it. Like, okay. So okay. Is this a more or less a linear card game, or does it at some point hit the point that a game like Slay the Spire does, where it's encouraging you to like do basically infinite runs?
Have you finished the first act?
I think so.
There's no way to confirm that.
How do I know? I mean, I
have you beaten the
yeah, guy? The boss.
You beat the boss. Yes. And you've done the next
Maybe
thing.
I didn't do the next thing. I think I might have stopped at the boss.
Christ.
Sorry. Okay.
No, it's not your fault. It's all experiences are valid. Okay, I'll tell you this. It completely throws out all the mechanics and starts again.
Okay.
How's that?
Cool.
How's that? Without and all the aesthetics.
Wow. Okay.
Okay, cool.
The entirety of the game changes.
Wow.
There are still cards.
Okay,
that's
cool.
Exciting.
I'm glad.
To hear. I love cards.
That honestly makes me even more pumped, because I'm...
You won't know until you guys play a little bit farther. You will not know why people are very excited about this game.
I'm already excited. Like, I think they nail...
I know, even that part is great, yeah. Right? That's what's so cool. It's like, it's not like... Not to dump on it, but like... There have been games like Nier where you got to get through some pretty chunky stuff to get to the fun stuff, right? And this is like...
You've activated Chris Plant.
No, well, no, I think it's very fair. This game wouldn't have existed without Nier. I think that's a perfectly fair and nice thing to say.
Sure.
It is also layering on some, like, it's like four layers of meta. Like, and on top of the card game, there's also, like, we touched on the escape thing, but just, like, highlight that real quick. You're in a room that is full of other puzzles.
Yeah.
That are being hinted at by your cards who also want you to escape. And so you're, like, cards are nudging you towards not just strategies in the game, but, like, things you should check out in the room. Like, you stand up and physically walk around the room that you're in, to be clear.
One example, and I was curious about this as well. So, like, one of my cards gave me a clue. This is, like, the first clue, so I don't necessarily think this is a spoiler. One of the cards is like, hey, you should read the instruction book that's in the room. And yes. In the instruction book is a clue for something else that is in the room. Is, like, if I just missed that prompt, do you think I would ever find that thing, or are there other ways that I would maybe find
that thing? You
would
have definitely found it. There are only so many things to click in that room. Like,
you would definitely have found it, but also there is that is the progression, really. Yeah. So, like, they would have kept prodding you, until you found the thing. With very little exception.
Big thanks, by the way, to Steven Spahn for actually, yes. I think, referencing this game and recommending it during that episode. What a good rec.
So excellent.
Do you think that there is stuff in this game for people who are not, attuned to the Hearthstone, Slay the Spire,
that's
Monster
me.
Train? Like, that's you. Okay.
Yeah, like, I do not get into that stuff, and this game rules.
I actually don't like Hearthstone very much. I think it's too many mechanics for me to
at this
really
point,
get on board
yes,
with.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it's just very forgiving. I think because it is a bit more chaos, I found that, like, I don't know. Maybe I just have a real smart brain and I would be great at Hearthstone if I gave more time to it, you know? That's probably it. But no, I felt like it was like a game that invited me in. And that's just something I don't feel with most card games.
I also want to say, like, it's very weird. I mean, we have two games this week. Two games Inscription I hadn't heard of until Steve mentioned it. So that's one. And then Guardians of the Galaxy, which none of us even were watching out for and ended up being, I think we'll talk about it, quite good. And that's kind of very rare. I mean, the indie game coming out of nowhere happens more frequently, but the AAA game coming out of nowhere is very rare. So this is a pretty rarefied episode.
It's less exciting though when it came out of nowhere because you expected it would be complete dog shit.
That's true.
And it's
actually more exciting for me that way. It happens almost never.
You know what? That feels like a good segue. I actually don't want to talk about Inscription too much. I am hopeful that we will return to it later.
Yeah.
In the
it'll
year,
definitely
certainly for game art. And you guys promise me you'll play more before then because you're not going
to finish it.
Have valid opinions. except for all experiences and opinions, which are valid.
Sure.
Let's take a quick break and we'll come back to talk about the Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, Chris Plant, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't there already a Guardians of the Galaxy game?
There? Oh, there was. Well, I didn't play that.
When I mentioned Telltale, that was not a joke.
That was legit.
Absolutely a Telltale experience.
Did you play that?
Did anybody?
I didn't.
I feel like that is one of the first Telltale ones that wherever it was kind of like, we get it, you're doing a license.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
everything.
That was close to the end of Telltale. That was, 2017? When did Telltale kind of stop?
Around then. Anyway, let's not dwell on the past.
It's different from that.
Let's live for the present.
But not that different.
Kind of, yeah. So, hey, everybody. Guardians of the Galaxy is a new video game that is actually good. Earlier, we just said, hey, we didn't keep an eye on this. Oh, we did keep an eye on it. The marketing for this game was dreadful, and they really managed to show the worst bits of it. I also wonder if they had a bit of a cyberpunk problem here, where they didn't want to show what this looks like on a console that actually runs well, so they showed really ugly versions of the gameplay. I don't know what the deal is, but the long story short, you can play Guardians of the Galaxy now, and it is quite good. It blends together kind of the action of RPGs like Tales of Arise and Final Fantasy VII Remake. It does. It does. I hear you scoffing. It's true. It does.
I know.
It has some of that storytelling vibe from Telltale. Characters, they just talk through the entire game. They don't stop talking. And what else would you say, Blint? A little bit Uncharted, a little Uncharted here and there?
Yeah, a little bit of Uncharted, a little bit of, there's like some like Tomb Raider-y side questing slightly. I think the big thing that just shocked me immediately was how instantly invested I was. You know, I like the Guardians movies. They're pretty good. I'm not like a huge diehard fan. But the writing in this game is like pretty spectacular. And I was immediately like when I play this game, the parts that I get excited for are not the action parts. And that's very rare for me. I usually like get down on the like quote unquote gameplay-y parts. It's more just like me walking around the ship, hearing like the fellow shipmates saying fun shit. Like it is so well written.
Yeah.
It is also, I think, worth noting that like, if you have not watched the Guardians of the Galaxy movies or played the much beloved Telltale series
and well remembered,
it's wild how little, by which I mean no, like exposition about like their origins. Like this game assumes like you know who the fuck these guys are. Like they have done all that. They have done all that found family stuff. And, like, you know it.
Yeah, but probably. I think
if you're playing this game, odds are you know
I
it.
I think they do a very subtle and good job of making it clear in the first level who the basics of each of these characters that you would need to know if you didn't know anything.
But they don't get bogged down.
Exactly. I think that's great. Yeah. I think it is a great thing because it changes the stakes a bit from, oh, no, are these ragtag oddballs gonna find a way to work together. Like they already did that to probably save the galaxy a couple times. And this time it's like they have differences still that they have not necessarily ironed out.
Let me correct one quick thing. So this game, I'm pretty sure, takes place more or less 6 months into the forming of them. So it's actually, I think, a prequel to the events of the other of like the movies, whether they're in the MCU
or not.
It's not in the MCU for sure.
Totally separate. And there are a number of things that very, very much separate this from the movies, especially how Thanos fits into this story.
Yeah, and his mom.
But they do make a point of saying that both Drax and Gamora had just recently joined.
Oh, yes, it is set early in their relationship, but I think you don't need to know anything about the movies here because it is a very different Guardians of the Galaxy story than where the movies take it, minus the fact that they both love classic rock.
I feel like it's I'm trying to put my finger on what is working about this game for me because it is really divisive in a way that most games aren't anymore, right? Like most people seem to reach a general consensus, and this is not one of those. I've heard some people like really, really not vibing with it, and some people like really enjoying it. I really think that they do. The writing is really at the center of this, and they really genuinely do a good job of, you know, a lot of times when you have antiheroes like the Guardians of the Galaxy, there's this underlying like marshmallow to them where it's like, yeah, they have a tough exterior, but you know, deep down they really love each other, right? And I feel like this game really plays with that in a way that's like genuine and fun and really does make you feel like it's five people who are out for themselves but do look out for each other, like at times where you don't expect. It makes it hit harder. Like there's a moment where they're in a tight spot and Rocket Raccoon, who is a raccoon with guns and who does engineering stuff, suggests to Star-Lord, who's Peter Quill, who's like the kind of the leader of the group, that a good way for them to get out of the situation they're in is for him to drop on the ground and act like he has passed out and is having some sort of episode. And then they would all leave during the distraction. And Peter Quill says, what about me? And Rocket says, well, you just kind of take one for the team. you would just be kind of taking one for the team. And it's like, there's a lot of that underneath it where it's like, wow, these people actually, there is actually like, and it makes the conversations actually have attention to them. So, cause like I had some choices that I made and then people like left the group for a little while.
Right. Yeah.
And I have no idea like if that's, you know, predetermined or whatever, but it felt completely plausible.
And it makes it punishing on a mechanical level too, because in combat, when you don't have every member of the Guardians together, it gets a little bit harder to get things done. I can talk to the divisiveness because this game surprised me that it is better than I expected it to be, but I do not love it. And that is because of the combat in the game, which is, you know, the other half of the game. There is a fun mechanic in combat where you can huddle and Peter Quill kind of calls everybody together and it starts playing, you know, a classic rock song. And some of them are real bangers and that's fun. But that's like the only enjoyable thing about the combat to me. It is within the first hour, I feel like you like get it, and then it will throw very sort of, you know, action-y game like this stuff at you. Like, this one's got a shield. Now what are you going to do? And it's like, well, we'll just get around him. We'll just get around him and shoot him and stuff. Like, there's other abilities that the other Guardians can unlock. You don't control them. You only control Star-Lord. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of command them to do what they are going to do, with the intent that, like, each enemy type has different sort of complications that you have to overcome with the different abilities of the people on your team. But I did not find that necessary at all. Like, I found, like, the first ability that I had to be, like, more than sufficient.
I don't know how far you got, but, like, you definitely will need to use a lot of those different abilities to win fights as the game progresses, especially as Peter unlocks, like, different elemental abilities for his weapons, and those work in concert with the different things that the Guardians have, and you really have to kind of work it together.
But even that,
it becomes more necessary.
Even that isn't exactly novel, though. I don't know. I just felt like it was.
I'm not saying that it's. Yeah. I'm not trying to act like it's revolutionary.
It does feel weirdly secondary to the narrative. Exactly. In a way that, like most action games, it's always the action first. Like, think of a COD game or whatever. Action first, always, always, always. And then the narrative is like window dressing. And here it is flipped. And it's, I don't find the combat bad. It definitely feels like filler to me.
It's just uninspiring. Like, you've seen this combat a lot, and then you have to do it a lot. And then as enemies get stronger, it doesn't necessarily get harder. It's just, this fight's going to take a long time. Shit.
My counterpoint to all this, I do agree that the combat is secondary, just because clearly, I mean, the amount of cutscenes in this game, I think that's probably another part of the divisiveness, is if you decide early on that you're going to play it like other games and try to skip the cutscenes, you're not going to have a good time.
Yeah.
But the combat, I am glad that I was playing Tales of Arise before this, as silly as that sounds, in that Final Fantasy VII Remake and a few other games have kind of like, I don't know, opened my eyes to this style of, I found it very creative. Like, I find that, you're right, you can just win this just by spamming the same attack, but I enjoy thinking of ways to, like, effectively combo my abilities together in the same way that you can, like, spam your way through Devil May Cry, but it's more pleasurable if you're, like, stringing together combos, right?
Yeah, I don't know how much of the impact was in, like, oh, I'm picking Gamora's special attack at the exact right time. Whether that won the fight for me or not, it does feel and look really, really cool when it lands. So,
yeah, yeah.
I also really dig the licensed music drops. It's like, it really makes you wish that more games would employ licensed music, as silly as that sounds. Like, when they have these, I mean, and they're 80 songs you've heard a million times, but they're still better than the, like, 95% of video game fight music or whatever. Like, I really, really thought that helped the, like, we were talking about the rallies and stuff like that land. I also like how the narrative stuff is even brought into, there's some, like, very light puzzle solving you need to do as you go through the world. But, like, to give you an example of how the narrative overlaps, there's, like, tunnels that only Rocket can fit into. And when you see one of those, it's, like, pretty much a grand slam. You got to just tell him to go get in the tunnel. But there was once or twice where when I would push the button, Peter would ask in, like, a rude way. and Rocket would refuse. And then you can like ask other, you can ask other people to like, can you get in there? And they would say like, you should probably try asking Rocket in like a nicer way because I'm not doing it. And then you have to ask him again. So like by asking again, I mean like you have to actually do the button prompt again to like get him to do it. So you ask in a nicer way, but it's like they're letting the narrative overstep mechanics in a way that most video games don't do.
Yeah.
Like it, that's what really is fascinating to me about this. I don't think it works in a lot of regards, but there is this like undeniable thing that they're doing where it's like really trying to make a hybrid of action and narrative that I think is really ambitious.
I also think that thing that you're talking about with Rocket is because of decisions that you made already in the game. We haven't talked about this a lot, but the decisions you make do have relatively important impacts on who is with your party at certain times or how people react to you. Obviously, this is not like the game doesn't end in a totally different way, but you could have entire missions that go dramatically, dramatically different ways at times. Depending on, say, who you decide to try to sell as a monster to a woman who keeps effectively a monster zoo. That's early in the game.
Yeah, it's important to know the team behind this game is the Deus Ex team who did Human Revolution. That team more or less jumped right into this. And you can see a lot of the impact both in like Deus Ex, obviously a series that is like very known for choices that really do impact the gameplay and the story dramatically. So you see it there. But I think just overall, I think the writing has always been strong in the Deus Ex series. And here it's that paired with more of a sense of humor, which Deus Ex, traditionally not a very funny series.
I think that the Deus Ex game maybe was well written, but not relatable or human at all. Shit, wasn't one of the games called like Beyond Human or something? Oh no, what am I thinking of? Detroit. Anyway.
Become human.
And despite the game that this game is, that Guardians is primarily aliens, like it is so much more relatable. Like the things that they talk about and the way that they either make beef worse between each other or try to squash it, specifically for me between Drax and Gamora, like that hit so much harder than anything that ever happened in Deus Ex.
Yeah,
like this game is funny, but it also has emotional moments. And Deus Ex, while I do like that series, has neither.
There are not many AAA studios out there that are doing narrative as good as this. I definitely think it's worth really taking notice and. I hope I see more from this team. I don't know how the game is going to do sales-wise based on, like, I think they fucked up the marketing pretty bad. But I hope that this doesn't discourage people from getting this team out there because, it lives and dies based on how strong that writing and the narrative is.
Yeah. I'll say, just for people who are worried that they may not be into the game because of the somewhat stale combat, this game has a lot of accessibility options, and you can sort of create your own custom like difficulty setting by changing like very specific parameters about the combat, and maybe think about doing that. I don't know if you can change them mid-game.
You can change them at any time, and you can turn off stuff like QTEs if you don't want to like mess with QTEs at all.
Yeah,
you just turn them off, and it'll just like play out the scene.
There's a way to tailor the game for yourself is what I'm trying to say. Where like, if the combat is not fun for you, you can make it pretty like quick to get through the combat and get back to the story stuff.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I think I'm hopeful that more people get to play it because I know it's a very crowded season, but I'm like really struggling just strictly on the narrative side. I'm really struggling to think of a stronger Marvel effort than this.
Yeah.
I think it is probably the best narrative Marvel game. I don't know about gameplay overall, but certainly narrative.
Yeah, I kind of liked Avengers, the story, like single player stuff in Avengers, I think a little bit better, but that might just be because I like the combat a whole lot better in that game.
Yeah.
Controversial take. Up next, we're going to be answering your questions.
Whoa. I think you just did a segue with a voice, which seems a little out of line, but I'm all willing to let it stand. Give me those questions.
Yeah, it's got to be more like that, a little more basic.
Give me them questions.
Here we are. We're back with a question from Betty Boo. Hey, everybody. This is a question from Betty Boo. Inscription is the first ever deck building game that I actually like. Also, the first game I actually bought so that I could follow along before you guys discuss it. Thank you. I'm glad that it was a good one. What strategies do y'all suggest for each loop? Like which encounters to choose, cards, etc. Justin, I'm going to let you answer this one.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think back to that.
It's been so
Justin
long.
Is in the MMO phase of Inscription now, so this is really
Right. Yeah, it's actually become like it's an ARG where I have to, my kids have been reading. I would say that if you find yourself not moving at a steady pace to try like working on some of the puzzles around the room, because a lot of them will lead you to really powerful cards that are good. And helpful to your deck building efforts. The other thing I would say is don't be afraid to sacrifice a card that seems like you need it if it will let you play something more powerful, because you will end up you can end up with this game in a bad loop of like playing a squirrel with the intent of using it for the next time, and then, you know, it getting killed by before you can even sort of like tap it or harvest it, however you want to say it. So, you know, don't be afraid to take chances, because that will often lead you to success.
I would say in the runs I've gotten furthest in, I always take the routes that give me the most opportunities to get rid of cards. Like once I have a strategy with my deck that involves pulling certain cards, like those very strong death cards, I then want to be able to get my hands on those in my hand as quick as possible. So like also anytime that you get rid of a card using things like there's an altar that you can just put one of your cards in and it kills it. It will give you a token that will basically give you free currency at the start of every fight. Like there's always good stuff that comes out of that. Same with the mushroom. There's like a mushroom person who, if you have two of the same types of cards, it'll smash them together, which essentially gets rid of one card that you may not want in your deck.
It's also really good to try to upgrade the cards whenever you can. There's these fires where it's so cool. You basically like you find a fire that you can warm one of your animals by, and that like lets them upgrade, and you can actually do it multiple times. But if you do it too long, eventually the people around the fire will get hungry and eat your animal.
Yes.
So it's like really you're weighing against that when you're playing.
Just one more real quick question, and this one's from me, so I'm going to take this. This one's from Chief Godzilla Officer. Wednesday, November 3rd is Godzilla Day. What are your favorite Godzilla flicks?
Already.
What?
Already. I can't believe it's Godzilla Day.
I know. Man. It's here.
I haven't done any of my shopping.
Well, did any of you have a favorite Godzilla film before I give my answer here?
I mean, for me, it's Godzilla versus Kong, which came out this year.
Yeah.
Movie.
Yeah, but it whipped ass. The most ass. I'm kind of with you.
Yeah, okay, I've always been more of a Kong fan, but I think the matchup between the two was spot on for me. I haven't watched the like classic Japanese original Godzilla King movies, Godzilla, yeah. But
my pick would probably be the soundtrack to Godzilla with Matthew.
Oh, that actually is a good soundtrack.
It's a fucking great soundtrack.
This is our second podcast episode in a month where we've talked about how great the soundtrack for Matthew Broderick's Godzilla, which is the title of the film.
There's a great Jamiroquai music video for that soundtrack that's very hard to see in a good quality, but let me tell you, it's good.
Are we talking about the score, or is it like Goo Goo Dolls?
No, it's you're not that far off, but it's like it's got
Wallflowers?
That cashmere sample Puff Daddy,
oh, yeah.
Come With Me. It's got Air by Ben Folds 5. It's got that cover of Heroes by the Wallflowers.
Yeah, there it is.
By the music video, are you talking about the Puff Daddy music video, Chris?
No, I'm talking about the Jamiroquai music video where they're in a movie theater, but then it gets attacked. Like floods,
oh,
and there's an attack by Godzilla in it.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's
the
good.
Puff Daddy music video is great because it's just him standing in front of a fan with a big white shirt on. That's more or less the
And just saying come with
just
me.
Just saying
over
come
over
with me. Yeah.
It's really good.
The best Godzilla movies, just very quickly, the best monster is Godzilla versus Hedorah. It's a pollution monster. Best problematic camping movie, King Kong versus Godzilla, not to be compared to the new one. That's the original.
Are these your answers, Chris?
Yeah, these are my answers, but they're also true. The best not so problematic camping movie, Destroy All Monsters, which is just a gem. And best overall
isn't
movie.
Isn't that a game?
Mothra versus Godzilla. It is a game. Destroy All Monsters is the one where you know what? It seems like we've made all of the monsters. There's no monsters left to make. What if we bring them back? What if we bring all of them back for one show and we fight a kind of like alien space people? It's good.
Y'all remember War of the Monsters? Back on PS2, it was like a monster fighting game. That was good as hell.
We need more kaiju content.
We do.
Yeah, that was a good game.
Can we talk about what else?
Deeper Underground by Jamiroquai.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, baby.
I'm going.
Fucking Brain Stew is on that album.
Yes.
It whips ass.
Can we talk about what else we've been playing this week?
No Shelter.
Yeah.
Rage Against the Machine. Come on, this album.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy this CD. I got to get this on vinyl for my kids.
Props to Broderick.
Kids. Broderick did it again. He's sort of like, Broderick was sort of the DJ Khaled before, DJ Khaled. He would like get all the bangers on one track.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about honorable mentions? Because I think Russ's is the same as mine.
It is.
Okay. It's
I should be noted, I actually did very briefly talk about it during Resties, but we can get a little more in depth here.
I think it kicks a lot of ass. It's called Death's Gambit Afterlife, which is apparently the expanded version of Death's Gambit, which came out like 3 years ago or so.
Yeah, 2018.
It came out on Switch with this Afterlife expansion. It is a Souls-like in the vein, I don't know if you all ever played Salt and Sanctuary. It is similar to that in the sort of way that it appropriates those like Dark Souls mechanics of like going around and collecting stuff and trying hard not to die on these big boss fights or else you'll lose some stuff. But I would say this is a much more mechanically refined game on a bit more smaller scale than Salt and Sanctuary. It has big Dead Cells energy, not necessarily in the mechanics of it, but in how it feels, like how the combat
feels.
And
the aesthetic to some extent.
And the aesthetic, absolutely. I mean, the aesthetic, you could probably guess, right? It takes place in this ruined kingdom where there's lots of undead monsters and you have to go fight a bunch of boss fights as you make your way through this environment. It has a little bit more Metroidvania stuff in it, like you get for defeating certain boss fights, like the air dash and the double jump and all that.
And what's really interesting is that was not in the original release. That was added for Afterlife. So they reworked the entire map to like integrate that stuff into it, which is bizarre to me.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's great. Like there's lots of, there's like seven different classes that you can choose from and then customize how you want and get subclasses later on in the game. And it just feels great. Really good.
Yeah.
It feels very, very, very good. It's a little bit limited in, like there's different weapon types that each, character can sort of specialize in, like long swords or daggers or magic tomes or whatever. And then there's like special skills for each one of those, but there's only like four different weapons in each of those categories and like only a handful of skills for each of those. Like it's a much more smaller thing than compared to like Salt and Sanctuary where you are, there's dozens and dozens of weapons to find and, all these different ways to customize your characters. But to the game's credit, like because it has narrowed the options down a little bit, like it all feels really great.
Yeah. There's a whole talent system for that like kind of blends into itself. Salt and Sanctuary had like, you could spend 300 talent points across this giant web of things. And here, every single talent you pick is making like a pretty big impact on your character rather than just like 2% more damage on blah, which I think is a really smart design decision. I'm totally smitten by it. And it just, again, kind of came out of nowhere for me. I know it actually came out a month or two ago, so it's a little bit old, but if you dig on, I mean, there's been so many great Metroidvanias this year, but here is another one.
Yeah, I can't recommend it enough. It is shockingly, I think, in the in the top five of the year for me, just because I
play it on Switch.
Is that the place to play it on Switch. It's 60 frames. It's like it runs fucking great
on Switch.
It runs really, really well. I can't. Yeah, you're gonna. If you like these types of games, you are going to very much enjoy Death's Gambit.
Perfect. Sounds great. I want to plug a TV show that I've been watching a little bit of that Travis got me onto, my brother Travis. And it kind of made me, our Guardians discussion kind of made me think of it, is Doom mm-hmm. Patrol on HBO Max, which is not one that I had ever watched before. And I just kind of ducked in to see how things are going over there. And it's really fun and it's enjoyable right from the beginning. And you talk about a super, and I'm just a few episodes in still, so I don't know how this all unfolds. But talk about a superhero show where people really actively work to not be superheroes a lot is this show. It is very much about the interpersonal relationships between the characters and them sort of like gradually easing into accepting like just sort of who they are. The Doom Patrol, if you don't know, is sort of like defined by the fact that these people are outsiders without traditional like superpowers in the way that we would think of them with a lot of heroes. Brendan Fraser is in it. He's great. Timothy Dalton's great. Tudyk, my man, Alan Tudyk, always a slam dunk. It's really fun. And it's, you know, if you got HBO Max, you can just like watch it.
I love the show. Yeah, I haven't started season three yet, but I've watched the first two seasons and it's spectacular. It's just really like good. Very super creative and constantly like introducing things that I like go and like dive into wikis about. And I'm like, they really made a comic about this? Because it's totally wild, but it's great. I really like that show.
The fact that three episodes in, they introduce Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man, it's like, whoa, what are we doing?
It goes wilder from there. Yeah, you're in for a treat.
Fresh, do you have anything else that you wanted to share? Or just
no, Death's Gambit's mostly been taking up my free time. So yeah,
have you finished it yet?
No. I'm okay. Yeah, you're probably a little bit ahead of me. I just close but not quite.
I want to share Nightmare Alley, the 1947 version, not the new Guillermo del Toro movie, which is coming out in December. But I'm sharing this because you should watch the original film now. It's on Criterion Channel. 1947 sounds like a really old movie. I assure you, if you can watch an Alfred Hitchcock movie, you can watch this and really enjoy it. It is grim. It's about a, I don't know, kind of a confidence artist who uses fraud to make a lot of money in the backstage acts of carnivals. And what happens to him when his ambitions get away from him? It is great. It's really cool to see a movie that is like kind of weird and macabre as this that also had like a really big budget. And it has me really excited for the new movie that is coming out with Bradley Cooper in it and a whole bunch of other folks. Of note, the new movie is based off of the book, which came out like a year before this movie, and apparently is even darker, which would explain why Guillermo del Toro said it's going to be like a hard R. But yeah, it's good stuff. It is very different than the type of stuff he makes normally.
Where can you watch it?
You can stream it on Criterion Channel right now. And the Criterion Channel has it as the, like, where it's like they port all of the special features. So you can watch, like, the documentaries about it and interviews about it and all that stuff.
Are we chomping Pop Culture Happy Hour's flavor with the honorable mention segment as it stands now?
I don't think so, because we select good stuff.
Oh,
that's right. Oh, cannot bring that heat here.
They have selected our show before.
Several times.
Like, not this show.
I'm just kidding.
One of the ones I work on.
You know, Linda Holmes is great. I still think about the review that she did of Scott Pilgrim a long time ago. It's a really great piece.
Witcher's headed back.
Yeah. Oh, my. Okay. Dude, get there.
I do want to thank some folks who have written reviews for The Besties. Specifically Prisma Bunny, Jeff Williams, Your Man in Motion, Mushroom Boy 1022, and Chris Plant's son. Thank you, Chris Plant's son.
Nice. Yeah.
And thank you to everyone else who has written reviews. We really appreciate it.
I don't want to tell you your business, Chris, but you should wait a little bit longer to introduce your child to the internet. I don't want to tell you how to do your stuff, but that's an irresponsible age.
I'm never letting my child anywhere near the internet or people knowing about my child. Here's what people can know about the games that we talked about this week. We talked about Inscription, which is the like moody meta card game thingamajig. We talked about Guardians of the Galaxy, the not connected to the MCU storytelling action RPG-ish thing. We also talked about Death's Gambit Afterlife. You know, it's one of those games that Fresh Chicken Griffin like. And I should actually probably play. Justin talked about Doom Patrol, which is now streaming on HBO Max. I talked about Nightmare Alley, the original from 1947, which is on Criterion Channel. And we also talked about Pop Culture Happy Hour, a show that I actually like, and I feel bad for dunking on.
Yeah, you should.
Oh, quick bonus, as long as we're doing it. Succession's the best show on TV in the third season.
Yeah, I didn't want to mention it because it seems basic to mention how good that show is, but it's really good.
It's like so good.
It's good.
I can't take the risk that not everybody's watching it to just get there.
Next week, we are talking about the game that I have been most excited to talk about this year, Forza Horizon 5, the latest entry in the best open world franchise that is in active development these days.
Can we pull the room and get an understanding of who else is excited to talk about Forza Horizon 5?
Wait, are we actually, is it too late to stop this?
No.
No. Are you all kidding?
I'm not fucking playing Forza Horizon 5. Not in any reality am I playing that game.
Well, what about COD? COD comes out on Friday.
I got diarrhea next Wednesday.
You are alert. Bonkers.
I put it on the calendar. Justin, I got diarrhea next Wednesday. I'm not
Justin,
playing a racing
play
game.
Play this game. It is, it.
Fucking.
Play
no,
it like it's an open
no
world
way.
Game. They're making the next Fable. Do you want a taste of that new Fable flavor?
Yeah, when that one's out, I'll play that, okay? Assuming it doesn't have cars in it. I'm not playing this fucking racing game.
Should we also talk about the new COD game then?
We absolutely should.
Yeah. I'll be your man on
the
street.
Oh my gosh. Okay, next week's going to be a fun one.
This is how I'm going to drink. I'm going to avoid Forza Horizon 5, I'll pound a bunch of fucking G Fuel and play COD with my gunners on.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'll play both because I'm a real gamer. Although I don't have an Xbox Series X, which seems like something I should rectify.
It's probably on PC too, right, Plant?
It's on PC. A real gamer would know that. Justin, can you take us home?
Yeah, gladly. Except it does take me one step closer to listen to people talk about Forza Horizon 5. Hey, thanks so much for listening to our show. Go play Inscription, no matter who you are, and play Guardians of the Galaxy if you think you would like it. And thanks to everybody who's been supporting us for all this time. We appreciate it. And thanks for being so cool. This is the only show that I know of or have ever heard of where when it started running ads, people were celebrating because of it. The show might continue in a more consistent
form. So if you want to visit some of our sponsor links, you should go ahead and do that. They actually pay attention to that
shit. Yeah, that would definitely help. Yeah, that would really help. So thank you. Thank you for that. And that is going to do it for us. So until next week, my name is Justin McElroy. Be sure to join us again next week for the besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?